Are you curious about food? Do you wonder about what you eat and why you eat it? Have you ever wanted to travel deep inside ingredients to discover the secrets inside them? Have you ever wondered, what would T-Rex taste like? Or could we make clouds that rain vodka? What did Henry VIII eat for dinner? And how was ice cream invented? Have you ever wanted to crack open the minds of the world's best chefs to discover their secrets? Well, this is the podcast for you. Welcome to Journey to the Centre of Food. On this adventure, two long-time food TV makers, Jay and James, set sail on a journey of food discovery. Each week, we welcome in different food experts, from top chefs to food historians, scientists to archaeologists, all with the purpose of discovering more about our incredible relationship with food. So if you're a perpetually curious foodie, then climb aboard for a journey to the centre of food.
You are listening to The Evidence Locker. Our cases have been researched using open source and archive materials. It deals with true crimes and real people. Some parts are graphic in nature, and listener discretion is advised. Each episode is produced with the utmost respect to the victims, their families, and loved ones. In 2019, a young woman's death went viral after her killer posted grisly pictures of her bloodied body on social media. While many of those who saw the violent images were left in shock and horror, others used them for their own personal gain, sharing them all over in hopes of increasing their followers and likes. But the worst of them all were those who sent the graphic photos of 17-year-old Bianca Devins to her family members, long before her body had even been located. Born on October 2, 2001, Bianca Michelle Devins, called Bia or Bee by her loved ones, lived in Utica, New York, with her mother Kim and sister Olivia. By the summer of 2019, Bianca was a 17-year-old recent Thomas R. Proctor High School graduate, planning to start studying psychology at a community college in the fall. The young woman had been struggling with her own mental health for a long time, and realized she wanted to continue her schooling to help people like her. Bianca first saw a therapist at 9 years old, when she was suffering from separation anxiety and did not want to go to school but just stay at home with her mother. Then, around the age of 13, Bianca started showing signs of depression. She was eventually diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder and borderline personality disorder, an illness that caused Bianca's varying mood swings and affected her self-image. However, Bianca was very smart and self-aware of her situation, and always knew when it was time to ask for help. Bianca sought treatment and was hospitalized for long periods of time, which seemed to help. According to her mother, by the summer of 2019, her daughter was doing much better and was full of life. Despite her problems, Bianca was described as a beautiful person, inside and out, with a heartwarming smile. Kim said that even in her deepest, darkest, lowest points, Bianca somehow managed to help so many people. She was so excited about her plans for the future and could not wait for her studies to begin at the Mohawk Valley Community College. In addition, Bianca did some work as a model and was active on social media, where she was known as an e-girl, who frequently posted photos on Instagram and Tumblr featuring emo fashion. She often switched up her look, experimenting with different hair colors and dramatic makeup. On Instagram, she had two separate accounts. But while many sources have stated that Bianca was a famous influencer or internet personality with a big following, in truth, she only had about 2,500 followers by June 2019. If you go and check the accounts today, which are still up, the numbers have changed dramatically. According to her friends, many of whom the young woman had never met in real life, Bianca was also part of gaming and other online communities, including gamer Discord chats and 4chan, On Discord, Bianca had her own server where she and her friends often discussed true crime, talked about cryptozoology, and dished about their daily plans. For the young woman who often felt anxious and awkward when dealing with people face-to-face, online communities were a refuge. On the internet, Bianca was able to be whatever she wanted to be, and her creativity shone. She often sent funny homemade videos to her friends and posted artistic selfies with quirky compositions. To give an example, one of Bianca's pictures on her Instagram account at Ecstasy featured her with pink hair and an Iron Maiden t-shirt surrounded by chains, spiderwebs, Tamagotchi, Xanax pills, a syringe, and a text which read, "Do you love me?" Hidden in the wings, someone was harboring strong feelings towards Bianca. But she did not necessarily feel the same way. Her active online presence and her striking looks attracted a number of male followers, called orbiters. Orbiters are men who follow a girl on social media they think is attractive and keep orbiting them online, but never actually get close to them. However, there was one person who captured Bianca's attention, a 21-year-old Lyft driver named Brandon Clark. The two met on Instagram in May 2019 and began to chat on Discord. Bianca and Brandon soon realized they lived only half an hour from each other and decided to meet in real life. But as Bianca had agreed with her mother, Kim needed to speak with the young man first. And so Bianca brought Brandon to their Utica home one night. To Kim, he seemed like a nice guy, very polite, goofy, nerdy, pretty much a boy next door. After that first time, Brandon started coming over to the Devons' home regularly. He was always friendly, talking with Bianca's family members. Bianca had told her mother she did not want to have a serious relationship as she was leaving for college that year and wanted to be free. Kim thought it was quite clear that Brandon wanted more. But Bianca assured her family that everything between the two was working out just fine, and Brandon understood that they were not dating. Bianca celebrated her high school graduation in June 2019, wearing a cap and gown that she had decorated herself with pink roses and glitter. Among her guests was Brandon, who was acting a little strangely. Every time he introduced himself to someone new, Brandon referred to himself as Bianca's boyfriend, even though Bianca corrected him again and again. For her, the relationship with Brandon was just a friends with benefits type scenario. For her, the relationship was strictly platonic, and she did not want him to call her his girlfriend. But while Brandon had previously seemed to be okay with the situation, at the party, one of Kim's friends, Cody Muhlengrat, noticed anger on the young man's face. On Saturday, July 13th, just 2 weeks after her high school graduation, Bianca headed to New York City to see one of her favorite singers, Nicole Dahlinganger, whose songs deal with dark topics such as self-harm and depression. Bianca initially invited many of her friends to come with her, but in the end, she left only with Brandon. Bianca's mother was actually relieved to hear that her daughter was going with a young man she knew and trusted. So when the two took off to the concert held at a small venue in Queens, Kim was not concerned. She had watched Bianca twirling and bouncing around the living room, trying on outfits, asking for her feedback. Finally, Bianca settled on a black tank top, black and white plaid skirt, black and white Vans, and a black velvet mini backpack. Before she left, Kim hugged her daughter, who hugged her back and said she loved her. Kim was sure Bianca was going to be all right and back home soon enough, but her daughter would never come home again. Bianca and Brandon arrived in New York City at 6:30 p.m., enjoyed the concert, left at 11:30 p.m., and arrived back in Utica around 3:30 a.m. But within those 9 hours, something went wrong. That morning, friends of Bianca and Brandon logged into their group chat on Discord to see what they had missed overnight. There, posted at 6:03 a.m., was a photo of a girl who kind of looked like Bianca. It was a little hard to say for sure as the person in the picture was obviously deceased. Her head seemed to be almost decapitated. There was blood everywhere, and her half-opened eyes stared blankly. The gruesome picture was accompanied by a message. "Sorry, fuckers, you're going to have to find someone else to orbit." It was posted under the username Apparatia, which was associated with Brandon Clark. At first, everyone thought it had to be some kind of sick prank. Brandon would never hurt Bianca. In addition, on Discord, it is pretty common for people to post disturbing images, and Brandon did it often anyway to get a reaction from people. So there was a possibility that the photo of Bianca was just a fake. Unfortunately, it soon became evident that was not the case. Brandon posted more pictures on Instagram, including one of Bianca's body, and from there, the photo spread like wildfire. They prompted calls from around the country as people reported the pictures to the police, saying it seemed like somebody had hurt a girl named Bianca Devins. They did not know if the photo was real or not, but one thing was for sure. The 18-year-old had to be found immediately. Not long after, police were already knocking on the Devins family's door. They did not show the horrific photo of Bianca to her mother, but informed Kim they feared her daughter might be in danger. Kim was confused. Bianca had sent her a message that she was on her way home, but she did not know exactly where she was. Kim tried calling her daughter, but the calls went straight to voicemail. While waiting for answers to what was going on, police dispatch received the call. 911, what's your emergency? To which Clark answered, "My name is Brandon. The victim is Bianca Michelle Devins. I'm going to kill myself." The officers present at Bianca's family home heard that someone named Brandon had just called and said he had hurt the teenager. They asked Kim if Brandon was Bianca's boyfriend or ex, but he was neither. Brandon was supposedly just a very good friend of hers. It did not make any sense to Kim that he would have harmed Bianca. At first, Brandon did not tell the 911 dispatcher where he was, so they tried to keep him on the line as long as possible to ping his phone. "Just stay on the line with me, okay?" "No, I'm not going to stay on the line with you. I'm going to be dead on the ground." However, before he hung up, Brandon finally said that they would find him at a dead-end road, just 10 minutes from Bianca's home. Meanwhile, Kim's friend and housemate, Kaylee Rimmer, who heard that there was a picture of a body circulating on social media, began searching Instagram. It did not take her long to find a post that showed a bloodied body from the neck down, with the caption, "I'm sorry, Bianca." A moment later, someone sent the grisly photo to Bianca's sister's friend, who was present at the family home at the time. She screamed. Kim could no longer look at her phone. She had started to receive notifications of people sending her the photos of Bianca, and she did not want to see them. If her daughter was really gone, Kim did not want her last happy memory to be ruined. When detectives finally located Brandon, he was standing outside his car, still armed with a knife. While pointing their firearms at him, the officer shouted, "Where's the girl? Where is she?" Without giving an answer, Brandon raised the knife on his neck and cut his own throat. Afterward, he laid upon a green tarp on the ground, took a selfie, and posted it online with the caption, "Ashes to Ashes." At this point, the police knew they had to get their bleeding suspect to the hospital, or otherwise, they might never get answers to what had happened. So they struggled with Brandon briefly and disarmed him. He was then placed under arrest and wheeled out to the ambulance. While Brandon was rushed to the hospital, the detectives investigated the scene. They found a cryptic message Brandon had spray-painted on the ground. "May you never forget me." Under the green tarp, they made the heartbreaking discovery. A young woman's body. They had found Bianca. Her family was immediately informed, but they already knew. They had not wanted to accept it, but they had seen the pictures. Soon after getting the confirmation that Bianca was dead, her younger sister Olivia posted the following tribute on Instagram. "I hate that I have to write this. I hate knowing you're not going to ever come back home. You were the best sister anyone could have asked for," she wrote. "Thank you for always being there for me. Thank you for being the best sister I could ever imagine. Thank you for always protecting me and sticking up for me. I am going to do this for you. Every day, I'm going to do my best and I'm going to get through this thing called life and do it all for you. Rest easy. I love you so much, forever and always." In addition, a family friend wrote, "I got sick to my stomach and the pics scared me, but all I can think is how beautiful and full of life she was and how bubbly and caring she was. She was an amazing person and still is regardless of what happened, and I will always remember her for that. So thank you, Bianca. R.I.P." But while Bianca's loved ones were grieving, the internet responded with morbid glee. Some were making memes out of the images, turning them into jokes. More vicious online trolls were sending them to family members with horrible messages blaming Bianca for what happened to her. Kim commented on the situation, saying, "It's horrifying. It's traumatizing to see people saying that your daughter, your, you know, this is my baby, that she deserves such a cruel end to her life." The Canadian singer Nicole Dollinganger, whom Bianca had gone to see in New York City, also posted on Twitter, "What happened to this beautiful angel was evil, cruel, and senseless. While I know some of you are very well-intentioned, I ask that you please stop sharing the horrific content her murderer distributed. Please stop sending them to me." Behavioral scientist Stephen Cremando believes the individuals most likely responsible for harassing Bianca's family and others involved in the case belong to an online community of men called incels. Incel is short for involuntary celibate. The term is used for men who have gone 6 months or longer without any sort of sexual activity, but not voluntarily. Incels have their own forums online where the discussion often includes resentment and hatred, misogyny, misanthropy, self-pity, and self-loathing. Incels see themselves as victims, thinking they are somehow entitled to sex, and sometimes even encourage violence against women and people who are sexually active. At least 8 mass murders have been committed since 2014 by people who either identified themselves as incel or had mentioned something related to the online subculture prior to the crime. Just last year, in August 2021, 22-year-old Jake Davison killed 5 people and then himself in a mass shooting in Plymouth, England. He had used incel forums on Reddit to express his hateful views. Another well-known case is the Isla Vista killings in California in May 2014. 22-year-old Elliot Roger killed 6 people and injured 14 others. His frustration over his inability to find a girlfriend, hatred of women, and contempt for couples drove him to commit a crime described as an act of misogynist terrorism. And yet, many individuals within the incel community have idolized Elliot and seen him as their hero. Something similar was now going on after news of Bianca's death spread. Although Brandon Clark did not identify as an incel, he was celebrated for what he did to Bianca. These people sent messages to her mother and other family members and wrote online that Brandon had basically done the world a favor by killing Bianca. The response to Bianca's murder by the incel community definitely served as a wake-up call for young women about the dangers of the online world. Bianca's friend, Elizabeth, said, "You know, those same incel communities that were praising Brandon's actions were saying, 'Oh, I wonder who's going to be next. I can't wait for the next victim, or, you know, or the next girl to be killed.'" Soon, more people joined the discussion, and hashtag RipBianca began trending. User @YupMay wrote on Twitter, "Tragedies like this are the exact reason why girls are afraid to reject guys. They fear his reaction. They fear losing their life due to a man's inability to handle rejection. So he lashes out. Stop fucking taking our lives because we said no. We have every right to say no." Hashtag RipBianca. Fortunately, there were also those who wanted to help Bianca's family in the horrible situation that they were in. As the social media companies were responding extremely slowly to people's pleas to delete the violent pictures, some online users began a campaign to flood the hashtag connected with the images by publishing photos of pink skies, rainbows, and fan art of Bianca to drive down the death images in the search results. Still, it took a long time for Instagram to disable Brandon's account, @YesJuliet, and to remove the graphic pictures of Bianca's body. Meanwhile, the police began their investigation. They Googled the phrase Brandon had written on the ground at the crime scene, "May you never forget me," and found out it was actually from a series of Japanese comic books called Punpun that Brandon and Bianca had often read together. These comics are violent and dark, essentially telling a Japanese version of Romeo and Juliet. In addition to the Punpun reference, Brandon also left a message at the crime scene through music. He had used a Bluetooth speaker and programmed his cell phone to play a particular song on repeat, "Test Drive" by Joji. The song uses driving as a metaphor to describe a failing relationship, as the protagonist looks for something long-term while his female partner is not as invested. So it was quite clear what Brandon wanted to say. In hopes of finding out what had gone wrong during their New York City trip, the police took a closer look at Brandon and Bianca's social media accounts. Soon, they learned that the two were not alone at the concert. Instead, they were accompanied by another person, another guy named Alex. Apparently, Bianca had invited him to join them, but at the same time, she was concerned Brandon might get jealous. Alex later told the police it had really seemed like Brandon did not want him to be there. On top of that, a text message from Bianca to Alex after she had left the concert with Brandon revealed there had been an incident that might have given the young man the final push over the edge. Bianca wrote, "I think you saw me kiss you." The teenager also reportedly exchanged DMs with another friend that were timestamped just 2 hours before her death. In these messages, Bianca wrote that Brandon was, quote, "so mad," unquote. As they were driving back to Utica, Brandon ominously posted a photo of what appears to be the New York State Thruway. On that post, he wrote, "Here comes hell. It's redemption, right?" He also changed his Instagram bio to read 10/6/1997 to 7/14/2019. But that was not all. As Brandon's cell phone was investigated, the police found something terrifying. In addition to the photos, there was a video. In the footage, Bianca is seen sleeping in the backseat of Brandon's car before the young man wakes her up to talk about an incident he had witnessed earlier. Brandon says he saw Bianca kissing Alex. Bianca then apologizes in the video, but reminds Brandon that they were not a couple. Bianca's apology seems to make Brandon even angrier as he proceeds to tell the teen that her answer was not good enough. He is then seen striking Bianca, who threatens to get out of the car and walk back home. The next second, Brandon has a knife in his hand that he had kept hidden under the seat. Bianca never saw it coming. She did not have any chance of defending herself. Brandon attacked her viciously, slicing her neck so deep that she most likely died within seconds. Afterward, Brandon screamed to the camera, "Bianca, why did you make me do this?" After he finished filming the horrific video, Brandon took the graphic photos that he posted to Discord and to Instagram. But even though Brandon exploited social media to gain attention to himself and stirred widespread outrage about the proliferation of violent content online, the executive vice president at the U.S. National Network to End Domestic Violence reminded Bianca's story was less about social media and more about how male entitlement and toxic masculinity increasingly continue to fuel violence against girls and women. This is not an Instagram story. This is a story about dating violence and homicide, about power and control, about a man who felt entitled to take a girl's life and emboldened to post photos of it on a gaming platform. People who control their partners don't care if they meet online or in college. They were dating, and he killed her. My guess is they were fighting. He was trying to exert control, and she was resisting control. In addition, Evelyn Stratmoen, who was part of a 2018 study that found some men show aggression when their romantic advances are rejected, said that part of masculinity is connected to one's social status. If something threatens it or is lowered somehow, a man may try and regain it. So, in this case, it was not good enough for Brandon to simply kill the person he wanted to be with, but could not. Instead, he needed to record the act and show others what he had done. Also, during the investigation, it was discovered that Brandon did not have the best possible role model growing up. 9 years before he murdered Bianca, in 2010, Brandon's father Jason held his wife Michelle hostage for 10 hours, holding her at knife point and threatening to slit her throat and kill himself. For one reason or another, Jason had got an idea in his head that Michelle was cheating on him, which was not true, but he attacked her anyway. The hostage situation started at 512 Cayuga Street in Fulton on January 4, 2010. Michelle's mother, who lived with the two, tried to call 911, but Jason ripped the phone cord out of the wall. The authorities eventually found out what was going on and arrived at the scene where Jason made Michelle call out to police that she was a hostage while holding a black-handled kitchen knife to her neck. Jason made me say jugular, not throat. He wanted to make sure police knew he had the knife to my jugular. I thought he was going to kill me. After 10 long hours, police stormed the house and arrested Jason, who was charged with felony assault, criminal possession of a weapon, unlawful imprisonment, and aggravated criminal contempt, as well as misdemeanor menacing and obstructing governmental administration. He was sentenced to 2 years in prison and a plea agreement. While the court records do not mention if Brandon, who was 12 years old at the time, was present during the attack or not, Brandon must have been aware of his father's objectionable treatment of women. The investigators also discovered evidence from Brandon's phone that suggested he had actually planned to kill Bianca. Events that took place in the concert were definitely the final straw, but Brandon had thought about taking his friend's life before Bianca ever kissed Alex. In the notes app, Brandon had a sinister checklist of things he needed to do to carry out the murder and stage the crime scene, including set up speaker and last song? Brandon had also Googled things like how to choke someone out and how do you hit the carotid artery to kill someone. He knew exactly what he was doing. Bianca's death had not been a crime of passion, but a premeditated murder. It seemed like after Brandon had realized he was never going to be in a relationship with Bianca, he had decided to kill her. If he could not have her, no one could. 2 weeks later, Brandon Clark, who had survived his suicide attempt, was charged with second-degree murder. He pleaded not guilty. At this point, Brandon's defense was considering an extreme emotional disturbance strategy. EED is a murder charge defense specific to New York State that is based on the idea that the defendant has suffered a profound loss of self-control due to an extreme emotional disturbance, whether it's sadness, anger, fear, or any other emotion. There has to be a reasonable explanation for why the person suffered this extreme emotion. One example of this kind of situation is somebody walking in on their partner in bed with another person and acting immediately. If a person is found to have committed murder under an EED, they would be found not guilty of murder, but guilty of manslaughter. However, this kind of defense strategy does not work if there are signs of a cooling down period or premeditation, as in Brandon's case. Nevertheless, prosecutors began their preparations for trial with one goal in mind. As prosecutor Sarah DeMille said, "We need justice for Bianca, and we need to make sure that Brandon Clark can never hurt anyone else again. That's what our job is." That is what Bianca's family wanted too, but at the same time, they were scared. They feared the murder video would be played in court. Even though the video was a crucial part of the evidence against Brandon, Kim said she did not want to be forced to watch the footage. "My last memory of Bianca's her full of life, so excited. So to have to see her in her last moments, how she was brutally murdered, is absolutely traumatizing and something no one should ever see." Fortunately, shortly before his trial began in February 2020, Brandon changed his mind and pleaded guilty to Bianca's murder, claiming he felt remorse. "I know that sorry is not enough. I know it won't take back what I did." Brandon also said that he chose to plead guilty to spare the family from hearing and seeing the details of Bianca's death. However, Kim did not buy the explanation. Her suspicions were confirmed when Brandon was back in court just 5 months after pleading guilty, trying to change his plea back to not guilty. It was obvious he did not care a single bit about the Devins family's feelings. Kim suspected her daughter's murderer had changed his mind because he wanted to be able to tell his side of the story, especially because media and production companies had shown interest in the case. No matter what the real reason was, Brandon still claimed his former lawyer, Luke Niebusch, a well-respected local public defender, had not visited him enough in prison and had actually pushed him to plead guilty. However, Niebusch said that none of Brandon's claims were true. Instead, he had encouraged his former client to plead not guilty and had visited him regularly. "I went to the Oneida County Jail 15 times prior to his plea. There were moments where I spent 4 or 5 hours with him. There were moments where I probably spent 2, maybe an average of 3. In the end, the judge denied Brandon's request to withdraw his guilty plea. Finally, on March 16, 2021, almost 2 years after Bianca was murdered, Brandon was brought in to be sentenced. Bianca's grandfather, Frank Williams, was present at the hearing and gave his final words to the murderer. "Brandon, for the cruel manner in which you took my granddaughter's life, for the total disregard you had for a human life, for the callous act in which you posted pictures of her murdered body on social media to gratify your own selfish purposes, you, Brandon, deserve to spend the rest of your life in prison. Before hearing his sentence, Brandon gave a statement. I hate myself for what I did. I am so sorry that I put everyone through this. I'm so sorry that I put Bianca through this. I wish I could apologize to her and just apologize and take it back, but not a single person in Bianca's family felt that the apology was sincere. Nor did the judge who sentenced Brandon Clark to the maximum sentence for murdering Bianca, 25 years to life. The family of the murdered teen was relieved. At least they knew now that the killer was going to be behind bars for a very long time. And yet, there is the possibility that Brandon Clark will be eligible for parole when he is in his late 40s, in 2044. The fight might continue into the future. But before that happens, Bianca's family wanted to turn their grief into something good. They started by calling for increased action to be taken by social media companies regarding graphic content. On September 21, 2020, Bianca's family introduced Bianca's Law, together with Congressman Anthony Brindisi. If passed, the legislation would require all social media platforms with more than $10 million in revenue and more than 100,000 monthly users to establish an office dedicated to identifying and removing violent and graphic content. It would also empower state attorneys general and the Federal Trade Commission to enforce those requirements and impose penalties on the social media companies. Bianca's loved ones do not want any other family to have to go through the same horror they did. They hope preventing death photos like Bianca's from being put on social media will be more effective in the future. The family does not want Bianca to be only remembered for her death photos and videos. And for that reason, in 2021, Kim Devins filed a lawsuit accusing officials of sharing sex and murder videos with the media. Kim said that explicit footage recorded by her daughter's killer was given to documentary makers and a YouTube blogger in response to a Freedom of Information request. According to the lawsuit, Kim was shattered to learn the videos were shared, and she feared the material would also go viral online like it happened with the images. The lawyer, Kerry Goldberg, who was representing Kim, said, "This has been emotionally devastating and fatiguing. The family has not had a day of peace since Bianca died over 2 years ago. It hurts my heart and confuses my brain that a 17-year-old murder victim would be further abused by authorities who gave no damn about her privacy. Bianca will be vindicated here." While waiting for the results of the lawsuit, Kim and other family members of Bianca Devins keep fighting for her, just like Bianca always fought for them. In the darkest days of Bianca's struggles with her mental health, Kim told her daughter to stay strong, if not for herself, then for her mother and her family. "Bianca promised she'd never leave me, and she kept that promise. She has always kept that promise." Bianca's family also has established a scholarship in Bianca's name for students pursuing psychology degrees. In their statement, the family said they hope to continue Bianca's dream to help adolescents with mental illness. The scholarship fund was set up through the Community Foundation of Herkimer and Oneida Counties. When asked how she wants her daughter to be remembered, Kim Devins said, "I want Bianca to be remembered for her smile, for her bright spirit, for her huge caring heart. Bianca always wanted to help someone. Even in her worst struggles when she couldn't help herself, she helped others." Bianca's grandfather added, "And she will never, ever be forgotten." If you'd like to read more about this case, have a look at the resources used for this episode in the show notes. Also, visit us on social media to see more about today's case. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also check out our channel on YouTube. If you like what we do here at Evidence Locker, subscribe on Apple Podcast or wherever you are listening right now, and kindly leave a 5-star review. This was the Evidence Locker. Thank you for listening.